like Trevor said, today we are going to be talking about a story of Jesus, and I'm really excited. It's one of my favorite, and people have been asking me just this week of like, oh, what are you teaching on? And every single time I get so excited about what we're teaching on today or what we're learning about today. But this morning I woke up really anxious, and I just woke up out of anxiety. I don't know if anyone else has had that emotion before where you wake up and you're automatically like, oh, I feel weird. And so before we get started, I just want to pray into that and give this time to God. So I know we just prayed, but would you guys bow your heads again with me? Father, Lord, I give you my anxious heart. We give you this time, God. Would it be, would we learn more about you? Would you teach us something new about your son, Jesus, God? And would you give us just new eyes to see a story that we may have heard, Lord? And Lord, would you just use my words? Would it be you speaking and not me? I pray this in your name. Amen. All right, so last week does anyone remember who we talked about last week or on Wednesday? Anyone? Steele? Yes. Yes. So we talked about the rich young ruler, which sounds like a really cool name. But we talked about this guy who he was really wealthy, inherited a lot of wealth. He lived a life that was abiding by all the rules. He did everything that he was supposed to do. And he just seemed like a normal guy that just happened to have a lot of money. And he lived a life that was following God, following all the laws and all of the statutes that people put in place in order to be more holy, which means set apart, means to be like made clean. And he asks Jesus, he has this encounter with Jesus where he asks him what it takes to get into heaven or have eternal life. And Jesus has this, obviously, he's the most interesting guy that we could ever meet. But at the very end, he basically tells this rich man to give everything that he owes, like give up all of his wealth, all of his possessions. And this man could not do it. And Jesus basically makes the statement that it's really hard to be a rich man and inherit the kingdom and go to heaven. And today, in meaning, and then on Wednesday, we kind of talked about, like, is it possible to be wealthy and go to heaven? And Jesus is basically, in that story, is basically saying, you can do anything. You can give up all that you have with God. It is possible with God. But when asked if he could give up all of his riches, the rich man could not do it because he was holding on to it so tightly. He found so much of who he was and his identity in wealth. And when I say identity, I'm meaning that it's an identity. Does anyone know, like, how would you define identity? Does anyone think that they can define it? Anyone? Is that a hand raise, Aaron? I think it is. That's a great definition, much better than the definition that I would have given. A personal structure of who they are. Yes. It's basically like who you are, how you define yourself is an identity. So this rich man had an identity. His identity was wrapped up in wealth. And today we're going to be talking about a man who did find his identity in wealth. But he came to find that life was empty. So we're going to kind of follow this really interesting encounter with Jesus. So we had a man with encounter with Jesus about wealth, and today we're actually having a very similar encounter, but the story goes a little differently. So everyone should have a Bible. If you do not, raise your hand and we will get you one, or you can go get one. Gavin could, oh, never mind. You got it. So Luke 19, if you want to open to that, it's in like the latter part of the Bible, the second half. If you're familiar with the Gospels, it's the third Gospel, can't count, Matthew, Mark, Luke. So it's Luke 19, 1 through 10. When you're there, put your pinky up. Yes. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So I am... So follow along with me. Luke 19, verse 1. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. I feel that. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and saw him and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly or joyfully. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anyone out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." All right. So starting out in this chapter, or this little section, we see that Jesus entered Jericho. So a little bit about Jericho is that this is like a beautiful city. I think it had a nickname called the Paradise of God. So it was like really luscious. There was trees. It was a booming city. A lot of people lived there. I'm trying to imagine like what the equivalent would be. For me, it would be maybe, let's think like, I don't know. What's a beautiful city? Seattle, maybe. It's like a lush green place. It's awesome. And it was beautiful, and it was on the road to Jerusalem. And Jerusalem was like a main city at the time. And people would often go to Jericho for trading, for like, it's got marketplaces. It's a big booming place. And at this time, the Roman Empire had conquered Israel and was kind of dominating Israel. So what the land should have been the Jews, the Romans kind of like took over. And how they did that is that they would actually like charge taxes. So they would like put taxes on people, make them pay. And these Romans came in and they're making all the Jewish people pay. And the Jewish people were bitter about it because that land should have been theirs and it wasn't. And for those of you who, you guys don't pay taxes yet, your parents do. I assume. In my like recent years have started paying my own taxes. My dad used to do them for me. Thank you, Dad. But now I do them. And so there's this thing called has anyone heard the term IRS? Yeah. It stands for Internal Revenue Service, I think is the last word. I just call them the IRS. But they basically they kind of come to you every year. You know you have to pay them, so you kind of go to them. And you say, "Here's what I made this year. Here's what I owe the government." And that basically pays for things to happen. It pays for government employees. It pays for, like, roads to be maintained. It pays for, like, security, like, police and sheriff and all of that. It pays for firefighters. So it kind of keeps the government running. So taxes are actually really important, and we have to pay them in order for us to function well as a country. But the IRS right now does a very good job of just charging what is due. And then they'll pay back if you like paid a little bit extra, they'll give you money back. But it's pretty fair. But in that time, the people that were charging were doing it really unfairly. They were like charging extra, and then any extra they actually put in their own pocket. So these tax collectors would like put money in their own pocket. So it was really, really like sketchy. It was not fair. And so the Jewish people were really bitter about it. So that's kind of like the context of this story of we're in Jericho, Romans take over, they're charging people extra taxes, Jewish people are mad. So we come to this point, and there's two main people in this story. There's two people that we see. The first one is Jesus, and the second one is Zacchaeus. I really have a lot of fun saying Zacchaeus. I think it's a fun name to say. So this story is like, people a lot of times look at Zacchaeus, but this is a huge story about Jesus. And we call it that. We call it Jesus Stories, this series. And this is we're learning a ton about who Jesus was. So when we come into this story, we see that Jesus walks into Jericho, and there's like people are coming to see him. He's kind of the talk of the town. So he's walking in. And before this, before we get to this point in Luke 19, Jesus had been doing miracles all around. He had been like sitting and talking and having dialogue with Pharisees, but then dialogue with these like tax collectors and sinners, people that are like the lowest of the low he was talking to and engaging with, which would have been like unheard of in that day. And then just even before, a little bit before this, we see Jesus raise a man named Lazarus from the dead, which is nuts. Like in that time, that was unheard of. So Jesus, his reputation preceded himself. Everyone's like, who is this guy? What is he doing? How is he doing this? So people were curious about Jesus, and he was making these massive waves in Israel. And then we see in verse 3 in this passage that there is a large, it says, yeah, there is a large crowd that went to see him because Zacchaeus could not see over the crowd. So there's like a ton of people. And I think about, there was a good amount of people at this one particular place that I was at. But I was at a part, like concert, art show kind of party thing. And at this one particular moment, and we were about to leave, but Kelly Slater, does anyone know who Kelly Slater is? Yes. So Kelly Slater is not a girl. It's a guy. His name is Kelly. But he is like the most famous surfer of all time. But Kelly Slater shows up and like people just crowd around him. And he's in this like house where there's an art show happening. And there's just people just crowding him of just, you know, wanting to catch a glimpse of this like guy walking around. He's bald, so you see his, you know, bald head. And I just think of that, like people like crowding around and trying to get a glimpse of Jesus. And so that's kind of like where we're at. Jesus is making waves. He's a big deal, and people just want to see him. Like, who is this guy? What is he doing? How is he doing it? I just want to see you. Like, if somebody raised somebody from the dead, I would, you know, I would want to see them too. So then we have Jesus. That gives us a little picture of Jesus. But who is Zacchaeus? So Zacchaeus is, there's a man in the crowd, and his name is Zacchaeus, and he cannot see over the crowd because he's short. And I don't know how short he is, but I'm imagining, like, I know what it's like to be at a show or a concert or anything. I'm really short, and it's really hard to see over people. So Zacchaeus is one of those people in the crowd, and he is a Jewish man. And it says, so we know that he's a Jewish man. We know that he is a chief tax collector. And he is short. So those are three main things that we know about him. When it says he's a chief tax collector, that means he is like one of the top tax collectors. So earlier I was talking about tax collectors and how they were really unethical. They were not great people. People hated them because they would charge more money and they pocketed it. So Zacchaeus is like one of the top ones. So that means he's been doing this job for a while. He was overseeing other tax collectors and other unethical people. And that meant he was wealthy, and he probably acquired his wealth by cheating, by lying, by like taking people's money that he didn't necessarily, it wasn't his to take. So because we know that about him as a chief tax collector, we know that Zacchaeus would have been completely hated by the Jews. So we know the Roman government came in, took over, they're taxing everyone, and Zacchaeus is a Jewish man. So a Jewish man is charging other Jewish people more money and taking their money from them. That people would have thought he was a traitor because he's working for the Romans. He's like doing that. He wants to live this life of wealth. So he is like going against his own people. He would have been hated. He would have been an outcast. And another thing that we would know about him is that he would have been isolated and he would have been lonely. So if you have your bulletin, there are some blanks. So if you are a note taker like myself, then you can write that in. If you are not, you don't even have to use it. But we do know that Zacchaeus was lonely. He wouldn't have had community. He would have been hated by his own people. He wouldn't have really fit in with Roman government, like the Romans. He was lonely. And I don't think that it's a stretch. I remember junior high. It's been a while since I was in junior high. But I know what it's like to feel lonely. And in junior high, if I could describe myself, I a lot of times was really, really lonely. So it can be a lonely place. And I actually like have kind of proof that that's kind of how it still is today. A couple months ago, I did a survey with junior hires and asked them questions of like what it's like in junior high and all of that. And so we got some cool answers, some sad answers, but some really insightful answers. And so here are some of the things that junior hires said about junior high. Junior high is a very cliquey place, especially for girls. It is hard to make new friends because everyone already has their group. Another quote says, "It's really hard and I feel really alone at school a lot of the time because there is a lot of people at school who are mean and make me feel bad about myself." To be honest, junior high has been really hard. It feels like I can't trust anyone. I feel like there isn't a person I could tell this to. I feel I don't have any close friends or even a best friend. So junior high, a lot of times, is really lonely. And lonely, another way to describe loneliness, there's other words that describe it: isolation, rejection, abandonment, friendlessness. Loneliness, yeah, those are some ways that we could identify with that. And loneliness is often, a lot of times we look around and we're like, no one else feels this way. No one else is lonely like I'm lonely. And a lot of times it's hidden. It's really, really deep down inside. And loneliness is often disguised in an identity that we create apart from Jesus because we think it will fix the loneliness. So using our definition that we talked about earlier, loneliness is this identity, we put our identity in other things to disguise our loneliness. It's often disguised in things like popularity, in money. As we just saw with Zacchaeus, he puts a lot of his identity in money, in clothes or possessions, what phone we have, what brand we're wearing, what shoes we're wearing, in our relationships or accomplishments, what sports we play, what friends we have, in relationships, in humor. A lot of times people act funny to disguise. They're like, I'm the funny person, and as their identity. It can be in distraction, in social media, in video games. We disguise our loneliness in a lot of these things, and we create these identities in order to like help think that that's going to fix my loneliness. And then soon we have so many of these levels of like perceived identity covering up the loneliness that the core of who we are actually gets really lost. And so Zacchaeus, we see here, is that he pursued wealth. Like he pursued the identity of a wealthy man. And the core of who he is got lost, and he came up empty. He came to a point in his life where he's like, I'm empty. So he got a little bit lost in the identity, and he lost the identity of who he was. And he probably, I would like to argue that we are constantly in communication with ourselves. We're always thinking about ourselves, essentially. I had a good friend tell me once, you know, Cameron, people aren't thinking about you as much as you think about yourself, which is not to say that it's, you know, a prideful thing or anything. We just genuinely do that. And so we're constantly in conversation with ourselves. And I'm willing to bet that Zacchaeus was talking, was lost in his head and probably heard things from other people and himself. I'm worthless. I'm a liar. I'm a cheater. He found all of his identity in wealth, and it came up empty. And so we see that Zacchaeus was lonely and he was lost. He was lost because his identity was not what he thought it would have been when he acquired the wealth that he had. And from what we just read, the quotes that I read, things that we see, we can empathize with Zacchaeus in his loneliness and lostness. We know what it's like. So just sit in that for a sec. So, So Zacchaeus is in this loneliness and lostness. And what does he do? In verse 3, it says, he wanted to see who Jesus was. So Zacchaeus, in his loneliness and lostness, I don't know what the word would be, he goes looking for Jesus. He wanted to see who Jesus was. And it isn't surprising that Zacchaeus was curious about Jesus, because what we learned earlier is Jesus had been talking to sinners. He'd been talking to tax collectors, people just like him. So when Jesus comes into town, Zacchaeus is probably saying, who is this guy? He's talking to all these people. People are like kind of weirded out, confused as to why he's talking to sinners and tax collectors. But I'm a sinner. I'm a tax collector. He probably would want to talk to me. So it's not surprising that Zacchaeus would be there. But he was really short. And you know what that's like, to be really short in a crowd of people. And it's really hard to see. So if you're tall or you have tall jeans, great job. You're going to be the person that can see everything. But Zacchaeus could not. So he climbed in a tree, a sycamore tree, which has like kind of like low hanging branches. They're really beautiful trees. He climbed in this tree and just to see over the crowd. So what that tells me is that he was desperate to see Jesus. I know it's kind of cool when you're like young and a kid to climb trees, but I don't know when it becomes uncool. Is it kind of uncool to climb a tree right now? Like if you see somebody that's like, I don't know, everyone's hanging out and there's a person in a tree. I don't know when that becomes uncool. But if I did that as an adult, I actually think that'd be kind of fun right now. But let's go climb trees after. But that tells me in that time, if a grown man was climbing a tree, that would have been embarrassing. Like, what is that man doing? He's like confused. He's lost his mind. But that also tells us that he was desperate. Zacchaeus was desperate just to see Jesus, not even like encounter him. He's up in a tree. He's not going to have an encounter with Jesus on the ground. He was just desperate to see him. For Zacchaeus to get to this point of humiliation, it meant that his life of wealth, lying, and cheating was not worth it for him. And he needed something else. He needed something else. And he thought, maybe, just maybe, Jesus would be the something else that I need in all of this. So he climbs in a tree. So we see the next blank. Zacchaeus was looking for Jesus. He was looking for Jesus. He was lonely. He was lost, and he was looking for Jesus. So that points us next to Jesus. What does Jesus do in this part? So as we move on, we see the first thing is that Jesus sees Zacchaeus. He sees Zacchaeus in the tree. And something that I've been really, really captivated by this idea recently is that our eyes are incredible. Has anyone thought about the eye at all? Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's insane what our eyes do. It's crazy what our eyes do. And they're so important. And they're essentially like a passageway from one person to the other. It's how you engage. It's how you interact with the world around you. They're really, really important. And something that I've kind of felt I've learned in the last few just even weeks is that we're really bad at seeing things, like actually seeing things. We're really bad at it. We were in San Francisco for our missions trip just a few earlier last month. Now we're in May officially, Cinco de Mayo. When we were in San Francisco, we were walking around the streets and we were in this particular district called the Mission District. And it's like really hip, really hipster. We began counting like how many AirPods everyone had. And dogs. There's a lot of dogs too. But what we realized one day was that people are really bad at seeing and like looking. And we just saw people looking down at their phones, at their dog, earpods in, they're just going. They're just walking. And it was funny, like we would want to talk, we were trying to talk to people this one particular day, and it was kind of like you're just trying to figure out how do I even engage in a conversation with you. And this one particular pair of men that we walked by didn't have a phone, didn't have earpods. They're on the side of the road. They're two homeless men, and their eyes were up. So when we walked by, it was like the coolest moment of just like meeting eyes with these men. And you could tell that they weren't used to having that kind of eye connection of just gazes meeting each other. They're used to people walking by, turning their head, looking away. They are not used to that interaction. And so it's crazy. And they kind of proceeded to tell us how they just want somebody to acknowledge who they are, to see them, to say, hey, how's your day going? And they told us about all these people that would try to look away, would cross the street, wouldn't engage with them. And it tells me that we're really bad at seeing people. We're really bad at our eyes. But Jesus sees Zacchaeus. He looks up. He's looking at people. He looks up and he sees Zacchaeus, a man he probably shouldn't have seen because he was up in a tree, like not in our eyesight. Or he was like, why is that man in that tree? I'm going to go over talk to him. Could have been weird. But second, we see that Jesus calls him by name. So we see that he looks up in verse 5, and then he calls him by name. So when we were born, we were all given a name. You guys wrote it on your name tags today. You have some people don't have a middle name. Some people do. Some people have a really long name. Some people are short. But we were all given a name. And this is basically, it's written on your birth certificate when you were born, which is basically a piece of paper that tells the world that you exist. Obviously you exist, but this paper is really important. You take it with you the rest of your life into school. You get put into this like whole system, the government system, and it says, Mitch Bonson, you exist. You exist officially. Yes, Mitch. So this is really important. Names are really important. It's how we engage with people. Like imagine if we all didn't have names. Like, hey, you kind of need names. Does anyone know what it means to be on a first name basis with somebody? Ben, what does it mean to be on a first name? Yes, that's perfect. It's to know them well enough for them to let you call them by your first name. It means we are connected. And so I didn't realize how important my name was until I grew up in a church from like I was baby born and grew up in the same church, went to the same schools with the same people, and everyone knew my name for the most part. But I knew everyone's name. We all knew each other. Everyone knew my name. I was used to walking into rooms where people are like, oh, hey, they called me Kiwi. That was my nickname. So that was the name that I was mostly known by. But everyone knew my name. And I was used to walking into a room and being greeted by my name. And I didn't realize how important that was until I went to college and no one knew my name at all. Which is kind of a fun thing because you're like, oh, there's so many new people. But I didn't realize how important that was. And I walked into places and no one knows you. No one really cares. Like some people, you know, obviously walk up to you and they care enough. But for the most part, you're just this person that no one knows. And I remember feeling really lonely and really unknown and unseen when I went to school. I went to Biola University, which is just a little bit north of here. But I remember feeling lonely and being like, no one knows me. They don't know where I grew up. They don't know my family. They don't know my name. I just felt lonely and unknown. I still remember the first time that I met and they asked my name. I asked their name. And just the importance of like somebody asking my name. And they said, when I see you on campus, don't act like a stranger. Say hi. And it was just them saying that to me was like, you're right. It's so many times you meet people and then you're like, pretend like you don't know them and you just walk by. But it's important. And they said, like, just greet me. Say hello. And that was like a cool moment of saying, this is really important. I remember going and meeting new people, and in conversations, I would make sure I remembered their name because I knew how important it was for me to feel seen and known and heard and loved, that I wanted people to feel like that too. So I would say their name and be like, hi, Charlotte. Nice to meet you, Charlotte. How's your day going, Charlotte? It was so nice to meet you. And we would have a conversation, walk away. It was nice to meet you, Charlotte. And I would repeat their name so much so that when I saw them again, I knew their name without a doubt. And it was the coolest thing it was a cool interaction, but names became this really important thing for me when I went to college, for myself. And it's kind of that awkward moment when somebody forgets your name. Like, we've all had that moment where you're like, it's Emma, but whatever, it's fine. So names are important. We know that. And so, like Jesus, this man came to see Jesus. Zacchaeus came to see Jesus, and Jesus sees him and calls him by name. That's like a big deal. Before this, Jesus did not know who Zacchaeus was. He didn't know him. He had no way of knowing his name. It would be like at that party with Kelly Slater, if I was walking by, like, just like peeking, and he'd be like, Cameron, hey. Like, I would freak out. And we have no relation. We had no previous relationship. That would be like what it was like, where you're like, wait, me? Like, you do the whole me. That was what happened. And this is significant because in an instant, Jesus, as soon as he says Zacchaeus' name, Jesus is inviting Zacchaeus into a relationship with him. It means that there's a relationship between them just by him saying his first name. So that was super significant. And that also tells us that the God of the universe, Jesus, is God's son. He is one in God. He knows our name. He knows every single person's name. That's the only way Jesus would have known Zacchaeus' name. So God, when you're ever feeling lonely, just think about it for a moment. God knows my name. He's calling me by name. So we see that he calls him by name. And third, we also see that he stays with Zacchaeus. And this tells us, so this is another translation, when it says stays, it also means abide or to remain with. And it's not Jesus saying, hey, can I like stay at your house right now? I don't have a place to stay. He's saying, no, I'm going to your house to stay, to abide, to remain. And it's not just like for it, the translation means it was probably a longer amount of time, at least through the night. Like, he was staying at his house. So this is super significant because that means if you invite somebody into your home, that's you obviously have a relationship. I would not invite a stranger into my home to stay the night. That would be kind of scary. But Jesus is saying, no, I'm staying at your house. It's kind of like him telling him he's staying at his house. It's kind of like the ultimate sleepover. We have that friend that we want to sleep over like all the time. This is the ultimate sleepover. Like, Jesus is coming and staying. So Zacchaeus is a man that felt unseen, unknown, and uninvited. He was isolated. People hated him. When Jesus comes into the picture, he sees Zacchaeus. He knows Zacchaeus, and he invites Zacchaeus into relationship with him. He's saying, Zacchaeus, I belong with you and you belong with me. And now we all have Taylor Swift song stuck in our head. And then in verse 7, it says, all the people saw this and began to mutter, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. So all these people are like, what the heck? He's staying with Jesus? Like, that was a shocking thing. How could he stay with the traitor? How could he stay with the sinner? And like the rich young ruler, these people probably all were like, you know, prestigious people. They're like, I follow the rules. I follow the laws. I'm kind of cool. I'm what's up. That's probably who they are. That's probably what they think. And they're thinking, Jesus should be staying with me. How could he be staying with him? So that begs us to ask the question, why did Jesus do that? And we're not going to answer that right now. We're going to answer that later. So hold on to that. Why did Jesus invite Zacchaeus? Why did he do that? Why did he see Zacchaeus? Why did he say his name? Why did he stay at his house? So in this moment, Jesus asks him or says to him, I'm going to stay at your house. And how did Zacchaeus respond? So last week we talked about a rich man who, when he asked Jesus, how do I inherit eternal life? Jesus says, you must sell everything. And this man could not. But this week, we see Jesus kind of doing the same thing with a man a little bit. But without even Jesus asking him, Zacchaeus says, he is a man that has done everything right, so or everything wrong. So the rich young ruler, He had done everything right. He'd abided by all the rules. As soon as Jesus asks, hey, you ha-, like the rich man asks him, asks Jesus, how do I get eternal life? And he, and Jesus says, you must sell everything. The rich young ruler could not do that. But here, Zacchaeus, a man who had done everything wrong, doesn't even, Jesus doesn't even have to ask, he doesn't even have to ask Jesus, and Jesus doesn't even respond to him. This man, Zacchaeus, just says, I'm selling everything. I'm selling everything. I'm giving it to, I'm giving all, like half of my money to the poor. I'm paying back all the people that I cheated out of their money, not just what they, what I owe them, but like four times the amount of what I owe them. So it's like, if I cheated Emma Hill out of $10, it would be me giving her $40, which is kind of cool. And you never thought you would see that $10 again, but now you got $40. So that's kind of what it, it, that's what's happening here. And he just is like, without Jesus even saying anything to him, he's like, I'm giving my money to the poor. I'm paying back four times the amount just because you acknowledged me. And that's kind of cool. And I don't know about you, when I give somebody money, there's always this little bit like, do I need this? Okay. Like there's kind of like that holding on to it. He does this in verse 6. It says he does it gladly. He does it joyfully is another word that is used. So he does it fully with joy. He wants to give his money away. He's like, take my money. I've lived this life of wealth. It's not worth it. He gives it away. Zacchaeus' whole world changed the moment that Jesus saw him. We see it in how he responds. It changed the moment that Jesus looked up and saw him. And in Matthew 13:44, it says, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. The moment Jesus calls Zacchaeus by name, he found this treasure. He found this treasure, and everything that he had was nothing in comparison to the treasure that he found in Jesus. And he sold it all. He sold everything. Just like when it says in Matthew 13, he sold it all and he bought that field. The field that Jesus gave him. So at the beginning of this story, we see Zacchaeus, a man that is deeply lonely and lost. And his identity is wrapped up in wealth of like being really successful tax collector. In his job, he was so lost in it. That was where his identity was. And in his loneliness, he went looking for Jesus. And he found the greatest treasure that he could have found. And my argument is that we are a lot more like Zacchaeus than we think. We can empathize with him in a lot of ways. Obviously, we're not tax collectors. I don't assume any of you guys work for the IRS. But we are a lot like him in a lot of ways. And in your bulletin, you have three questions that I ask. And the questions are, where am I lonely like Zacchaeus? Where am I lost? And where am I looking? Where do you feel isolated, friendless, rejected? Those words that we used before. Where do you feel lost? Where do you feel like, I don't even know who I am? And where are you looking? Where are you looking for these identities to disguise your loneliness in? Where are you looking? Is it sports? Is it school? Is it grades? Is it church? Is it, you know, where is it? Is it family, friends? Ask yourself where you're looking. So we're going to take a few minutes. Everyone should have a pen. If you don't, we will make sure that you guys get one. So just raise your hand. But yeah, take a few moments and answer these questions. So if you haven't gotten through all those questions, you can take your bulletin with you, answer these questions. But right now I want to do a little exercise with you guys. And I'm going to ask everyone to close their eyes. Everyone just close your eyes. Everyone has their eyes closed, so you don't have to like look around and make sure. I'll make sure everyone's eyes are closed. Close your eyes. And now imagine you're walking on a road and Jesus is coming into town. There's a big crowd of people around you and you can't see. You can't see a thing. So imagine you see a tree. You walk over to the tree and you climb the tree. It can be any tree that you want it to be. You're climbing this tree just to get a glimpse of this man, Jesus, walking through a crowd of people. And you see him walking. And just as he's walking by you, you see him look up. He meets your eyes, and you're kind of like shocked. Imagine what that would feel like of him just looking up after he could be looking at anyone, and he looks up at you and makes eye contact with you. And then imagine hearing his voice say your name and the shock that you would feel. What does that feel like? He says your name out of nowhere. And you climb down that tree and you walk up to him with so much joy. Imagine what that would feel like. And then imagine hearing him say, I'm coming to your house. I'm coming to your house to stay. You guys can open your eyes now. So if you find yourself lonely or lost with your identity, tied up in a bunch of things, things that you wrote down in your bulletin, things that you haven't even thought about yet, look for Jesus. If you find that your identity, if you find that you're lonely or lost, look for Jesus. Jesus sees you. He knows your name. And he's inviting you into a relationship with him. And that, like Zacchaeus thought, is a treasure that is so much more worth anything that we can find our identity in here on earth. So just as Zacchaeus responded joyfully, we're in a cool opportunity where we get to respond in worship. So right now, would you guys stand with us and let's respond knowing that Jesus sees us, he knows us, and he is inviting us to a relationship with him. Let worship be our response in this time.